Week 131 of Brada's Branded Thoughts. It is October 18th as we sit here on this Sunday and record what is, well, what has been a long time coming. Noah, the last Iowa football game as Iowa fans we've been able to watch was in late December at the Holiday Bowl versus USC. And by the way, I am joined by Noah Makai-Kruko. Alex Brada is on here as well. This is our official preseason show where we not only are going to break down the depth chart, the schedule, and also the game this Saturday, which got a whole lot more interesting with some breaking news this afternoon. But Noah, it's been a long time coming. We didn't know if we'd ever get to this point, but here we are.
Yeah, it's, as you said, it's been a very, very long time coming. And tell me if I'm wrong, but from December to October is a very, very, very long time to go without football.
It's also a long time when you get March Madness taken away from you. You get the NBA season largely taken away from you. And yeah, I mean, normally we're talking about football. We're talking about, usually we do our show in August. I don't know how we got to this point, but we are here and we've got a football season that's upon us. College football's been going on for about a month and a half. There have been some hiccups in there. There's been some games that have been postponed. But for the most part, I think I heard a stat the other day. It was like 85 to 90% of games that have been scheduled have been played successfully. And Alex, before we get into the Big Ten and Iowa and our outlook on the season, of course, we've been wanting to do that for a while now, and we're actually going to officially break it down and make our predictions and our takes. What have you seen from college football so far as it relates to coronavirus and how these teams and programs and conferences are navigating through the COVID world, the world that is, I mean, it's a reality right now. That's what it is. It may be this way for a while, but what's been your primary reaction to how most college football teams and games have handled the first month and a half of collegiate sports?
Well, I think, you know, they've been handling it is the main thing. I was earlier on this year, I was just thinking that they probably wouldn't be willing to kind of trudge through a season having to deal with players out. And I was wrong about that. So I think, you know, they're willing to make it work no matter what. I think the NFL is the same way. They know what's going to happen. And, you know, we all expect to have difficulties, but I think everyone's willing to put up with that. So one way or another, you know, the show goes on, and that's what we've been seeing, I think, in college and NFL football.
And let's be honest, what happened from the beginning of August until, what, mid-September, when we finally got the announcement that we were back on for college football, that first song that we listened to, that new stuff from Kygo and OneRepublic, first of all, I think everybody here knows that I believe that Ryan Tedder is one of the best in the business as far as not only musical talent, vocals, but also his songwriting ability. And I'm sure, Micaiah, you probably didn't like that song. But the lyrics of that song are very appropriate because we know what it felt like to have Iowa football taken away, Big Ten football taken away. And Alex, I don't think any of us thought once that announcement was made in early August, did you think there was any chance they reversed it? Because I started to believe that towards the second term of the period, right, where we understood the Big Ten football was gone. But I really did not expect when they made that announcement, I thought that was pretty much final. I think they made the correct call reversing it, and we'll talk about some of the measures that they have taken put in place to be able to ensure the proper testing protocols and safety of the players and staff. But, Alex, did you think there was any chance that once we lost Big Ten football, we'd somehow get it back this fall?
Well, first of all, I'd like to point out I appreciate the fact that you think that song was written about losing a football season.
Well, the only thing that's not accurate, the only thing that's not accurate about that song is Ryan Tedder says, sometimes you got to lose somebody to know how much you love them. Well, we already know how much we love him. But this just added incentive. So go ahead. Go ahead and make your point.
So I was kind of, when they first canceled, I just figured they were the first domino to fall, and I figured other conferences would follow suit. That didn't really happen, as we know. So at first, yeah, I thought it was, when it first got canceled, I thought it was done. But then, you know, as things played out over the next couple of weeks, I thought, well, this is not going as cleanly as I think the Big Ten probably thought and most people thought. And, you know, in the next few weeks, we figured out how upset people were, especially, I mean, if they had all canceled, there would have been backlash also, but it wouldn't have been so much directed just at the Big Ten. So, you know, towards the end of that, however long it was between their going back on their decision, I feel like it kind of changed. The feeling kind of changed, you know, week by week as to what was going to happen.
Yeah, and so the announcement was made that they would begin on October 24th. There was so many rumors swirling, and we're not going to recant all the different rumors that were swirling between August and September. But Micaiah, we were all skeptics on if football could happen during this pandemic. Here we are in October. We don't know when a vaccine, if a vaccine will come out. We've heard rumblings from the powers that be, as in the companies that are working on vaccines, that maybe we get one in November, but of course it's going to take a long time to be distributed. That's towards the or about the earliest that we're going to see one released that is safe and effective. But Micaiah, you would probably be the first to admit you were skeptical. I know specifically you were skeptical towards it. I think, we all were, but I was less skeptical as time went on and we learned a little bit more. But Micaiah, you were more skeptical. Here we are on October 18th. From what you've seen, from what you've seen in the NFL, from college football, now the NFL is different. We'll talk about the differences. But are you more on board now that you think that this can be done in a moderately safe and appropriate manner, given the testing protocols that the Big Ten has in place in comparison to the other leagues like the NFL and other conferences within the within college football?
I think it can be done. I think it can be done somewhat safely. There are going to be problems regardless. No matter how many tests you make, no matter what restrictions you put in place, you're not creating a completely isolated environment for these players. You just can't, given the architecture of the sport. So problems are going to come up, and it's happened for the NFL, which, like you said, the NFL is different, but it's just going to affect the season. It's going to probably affect every team. It we'll have to wait and see, I guess.
Well, here's the thing. And I agree with you on this. Here's what I've learned, at least from my perspective on watching what's happened with college football and what's happening in the NFL. The NFL went the first couple of weeks with no COVID cases at all. There was nobody on the COVID reserve list at all. Now, there's not a ton of guys on there now. There may be 10 or 11 guys total across the league, that a lot of them are on practice squads and whatnot. But there are players on the COVID list now. But the first couple of weeks were smooth sailing. And the Tennessee Titans, as we all know, really got the ball rolling with cases. Now, what I found interesting about what happened with the Tennessee Titans, though, Noah, the fact that Tennessee had, over the course of the following week, including just a day or two after they played the Minnesota Vikings, they had multiple COVID cases, some on staff, about half of them were staff members, and some players. But the Minnesota Vikings had zero positives from all that. So that tells me, and again, we can't be dogmatic about this because there's really no way even doctors and physicians, you know, medical personnel within these franchises can really trace it completely. But there has not been any evidence thus far that the virus is spreading during games. Again, it's going to spread within people who are spending time with each other. But I thought it was interesting the Tennessee Titans, the league, as I understand it, the league is currently investigating the Titans as to whether they violated policy as far as where they go, what they do with their time, where they have meetings and spend time with one another as a team away from the facility. But there has not been any evidence to substantiate the claim that this virus has spread on the field. Again, half of the people who tested positive for the Tennessee Titans were personnel. A lot of them were practice squad players. If you look at the players that have tested positive for New England, they have been mainly practice squad players. Of course, we know Cam Newton had it. Stephon Gilmore had it. Those are a couple big names that have had it. And there have been a couple other cases. The Chiefs had, I think, a couple cases. Right now, the last few days have been pretty quiet as far as new COVID cases. But, Noah, what are your thoughts on where we're at now? Because as things have gone, even though there have been cases, and I agree with Micaiah, there's going to be problems. There's going to be players who are out. There's going to be staff members who are out. But I come back to this, especially with college athletes. And pro athletes, it's a totally different world. I get that. But with these college athletes, I don't think a person can argue and say that these kids are more at risk of transmitting the virus playing than they would if they were not playing. Can we all – what are your thoughts on that, Noah?
Well, you make an interesting point about whether or not it is actually being transmitted on the field. And the case with the Titans is a very interesting one. If there were players that have – COVID on the field and somehow not get it, is that a case of the sport, you know, as it stands, you're not at a high risk of transmitting across, say, a team if you're not in the same locker room together? Given what we know about the virus, I would say most likely it's just a matter of it just, for whatever reason, didn't transmit to the other team because it's about being in close proximity. And, you know, in linemen, you basically got your face masks right up against each other and you're tackling people. You're getting in close proximity with other players. So it should be able to transmit. We just maybe haven't seen it yet for whatever reason. But as to where college stands, it's interesting how, because of the school dynamic and how these are student athletes and the college campus atmosphere around them, how it can affect that so much from the NFL. Because NFL players, they have their lives at home, and then they have their lives in the locker room and on the field. But these students have to go around the campus, you know, go to classes, or maybe not go to classes, depending on school policy, and have to deal with, you know, life on the campus around a lot of other people. So given what we've seen from other conferences that have been going on for a while and how it's been more or less okay, I've got high hopes for how things are going forward. We've seen some measure of success in the sample size that we've gotten, so I'm hopeful.
And Alex, let's just take a poll here. Now we'll start with you, Alex. And Noah makes a good point. When you take what the Big Ten did in August, remember, guys, when the Big Ten announced they were canceling the season, all of a sudden, like 9 Iowa football players got COVID that very next week. That was literally the week after they got rid of the season. Does anybody here think that's a coincidence? If you give these kids motivation to quarantine, or I wouldn't say quarantine because there's no way you can quarantine, but if you give these kids motivation to stay safe away from the field, they'll stay safe. If you take football away from these kids, what motivation do they have? They're not exposing their elderly family. They don't believe that there's a risk for themselves, and they have nothing to play. They have nothing to work for. So, Alex, let's start with you. Do you think these kids are more at risk playing football due to the contact on the field and within the locker room, or do you think they're less due to the fact that now they have motivation to stay safe when they're not with their teammates? And just so you know, I think you know where I stand on this. I think it's overwhelmingly they are safer with their teammates, because if you send them back into this general student population, look at how many students are testing positive at Iowa State, Iowa. These are just students. Look at the athletic numbers. If you look at the athletic departments, hardly any. If you look at Iowa over the past month, there have been hardly any cases. But then you look at the percentage of cases for the student population in general, and it's much higher.
Yeah, I mean, as far as actual safety for the players, I don't know that there's, if anything, if there's really any difference whether they play or not. The argument that having football is going to put them in more danger, I don't think is true one way or another, regardless of which is more likely to spread it. I don't think that's a valid argument anyways, but yeah, I mean, you make a good point. I think it's probably more likely if they don't have any incentive to be careful. College kids are not going to be careful if they don't have to be, and they know that they're not at a high risk of serious complications, especially athletes who are in excellent shape of having real problems from this virus. So they're not going to be careful in general. There's always exceptions to the rule. They're not going to be careful if they don't have any incentive not to be, so, or to be careful. So, yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that for the most part. I don't think if you could run a simulation of two simulations of one universe where you have college football during COVID and you have another universe where the kids stay home, or at least they don't play football anyway, I think you probably would see less cases with the football players overall. But regardless, I don't think there's any simulation where you'd see more cases with the football players.
Scott Van Pelt of SportsCenter at night had an interesting quote when the first cases of the Titans came out. He said, because some people start to panic and it's thinking, well, you know, there's going to be cases. No one ever argued there were going to be cases. Scott Van Pelt said, and I quote, "We knew there would be cases in the NFL, just like it was inevitable that there are cases in life." So, the argument, and I want to move on from this because we've hashed this out so much in the past that anybody else sick about talking about COVID? Anybody?
Me?
Okay, thank you.
You can't see me, but I am raising my hand.
I'm sick of it in general. I can't even watch the news. I just turn the news off. I can't take anymore. It's just
I haven't watched the news for years.
Micaiah, I wake up in the morning and I get Apple News on my Yahoo account because I have an iPad. And I turn over, I wake up in the morning and, what's on my phone? Who texted me? Apple News. COVID, COVID, COVID. It's just, just shove it down your throat. It's just out of this world. I can't take it anymore.
So let's stop talking about it.
Let's stop talking about it. excuse
me. Are you having I was going to say, are you having a coughing fit or did you forget to unmute yourself?
he's got that COVID.
Yeah, I got COVID. sorry, it was that dry pizza crust. Okay. So, we all are happy about football happening. It's here. And last week, Noah, we're going to kind of have you take the lead here. Or actually 2 weeks ago, excuse me. Kirk Ferentz and the Iowa staff released their first depth chart of the season. And, of course, Kirk Ferentz always likes to say how he doesn't really care too much for depth charts and they don't mean a whole lot, but as most media people do, they do care about it because fans like breaking it down. And so we're going to break it down on here and what changes we may see come maybe even tomorrow if we get our first depth chart tomorrow, maybe Tuesday. I can't remember if they release it Monday or Tuesday, but I think it's tomorrow. But let's look at the depth chart for preseason depth chart for Iowa. Alex, I think we broke it down a little bit. I broke it down on the last podcast that we did. I think the biggest takeaway, and just kind of glancing through this initial preseason depth chart, Alex, is there weren't a whole lot of surprises, and that surprised me. It seems like every year at this time, now of course, I'm not saying literally in October, because usually we're talking about this in August, but usually prior to the season starting, when we get a depth chart, there's always a couple surprises somewhere. You know, someone jumps someone or a name that we've never even really heard of has taken a big jump. Alex, are there any surprises on this depth chart, really? Do you?
Well, I don't know if it qualifies as a surprise. Just the offensive line kind of got jumbled up, but I didn't really know what to expect. I guess we kind of figured that it would get jumbled up, so I wouldn't say I was totally surprised with that. Nothing I was shocked about. Go ahead, Noah. I'm done.
The biggest thing I would talk about in starting with the offensive line, assuming we're going to jump into this now, is star right tackle, potentially, Coy Kronk, and how he's not listed as the starter right now. That was the first thing that I noticed when I saw this copy of the depth chart.
And I'm with you. That's the first thing I noticed. I was shocked by that. However, Alex, I want you to testify to this because if I testify for myself, it's not much of a testimony. What have I been advocating for as it relates to Coy Kronk since we got the announcement that he was transferring to Iowa? What has been my advocation there?
I don't know. Since the depth chart came out?
No, since he transferred to Iowa, what have I been saying I'd like to see Iowa do?
No, I don't remember.
Anyone else? Anybody else? Or I got to testify for myself here.
Sorry, Corey. I think you're going to have to testify for yourself.
I think we'll believe you.
Okay. What I've been saying, and you can listen back to previous podcasts, Micaiah, I'm sure you'll spend all of your time this evening going back and trying to find which podcast this was. But I've said the whole time, I said with Iowa's horrific guard play the past year, a couple years, really, I said, why don't we slide that big boy inside? I'd slide that big boy right inside. I wouldn't even have him at tackle. I'd be running Mark Kallenberger, and I called it Mark Kallenberger at tackle because Kallenberger is more of a natural tackle than a guard. And let him, because he's probably going to be your future. I mean, who else is going to be playing tackle, right tackle after this year? It's probably going to be Kallenberger. Now, Kallenberger is a junior, although with the eligibility exception this year, basically it's a free year for whoever, if the coaches and the players both agree on it, and the university can afford to pay for another extra year of eligibility, the eligibility thing the NCAA passed would enable Kallenberger to stay here for a couple more years, potentially. But my point is, I've been advocating for Kallenberger at tackle, and you slide Kronk inside. Now, we did not see that, and we have no indication from the coaches that Kronk is running on the inside. And I agree, Micaiah, that Kronk is a natural tackle, and if you've got good enough guard play inside, yeah, keep Kronk out. But it was a little bit of an eyebrow raiser when I saw Kallenberger listed ahead of Kronk. I thought, if that's the case, if Kallenberger's playing that well, and apparently he is playing well, I seriously doubt that that's a total error, although what we're coming around to with this, Micaiah, is Brian Ferentz said 2 weeks ago that if there was a game today, that Coy Kronk would be the starter at tackle. So I don't think we can read too much of the depth chart on at that position. I just think if Kallenberger is playing that well, if he's right there neck and neck with Kronk, why not slide that big boy inside?
Yeah. You want, at a certain point, talent trumps position fit. Usually, especially on an Iowa football team, you'd want the better fit. But if he's just that much better of a talent, then, you know, you need him on the field.
And the thing I would look at in looking at the guards that they have on the depth chart is there's not a lot of experience there. I mean, at your right guard position, you've got Schott, who's a junior, and then listed behind him is Noah Fenske, who's a redshirt freshman. There's experience there.
That was a name, Noah, that surprised me when I saw Noah Fenske on there. Now, remember, there are five guys who rotated at guard that are still on the team this year. Kyle Bichotte, of course, is the walk-on that got, remember, Shooter is his nickname. He got some time last year but did get injured. Kallenberger got time at guard. Again, I think he's more of a natural tackle, but he had time last year. Justin Britt, who, interestingly enough, is listed as the backup center on this depth chart. He, as a true freshman last year, got a game or two in, but remember, he played less than five games and was able to maintain that year of eligibility. So he's there. How many?
Cody Ince, of course.
Cody Ince got time last year as well. I believe he played the entire year. That's why he was listed as a sophomore, but none of these guys played all that well. I think we all can agree on that. So that's four guys right there, and we're not counting Cole Banwart, who was not listed on this depth chart. Alex, I think you predicted a couple weeks ago that Banwart would be one of the starting guards. When asked why Banwart was not on the depth chart, Kirk Ferentz basically said, oops, I accidentally left him off. He would be our starter. So,
I didn't see that. Did he seem like he was tongue-in-cheek when he said that? Or
no, I don't think so. I mean, to me, it sounded like he actually just didn't. I mean, it almost seems like the way he does this is, and I would not be surprised with how Ferentz is old school. I would not be surprised if Ferentz's secretary comes into his office and says, Coach, do you have the depth chart we got to release to the media today? Oh, no, let me get that worked up for you. Do you have a post-it note or something? And he probably takes it on a post-it note and writes a bunch of names down. Here you go, type this up. And then they type it up on this sheet of paper. I'm serious. I bet you that's what happens here. How do you forget your starting guard? How do you just, I forgot to put him on the list. And how do you not, obviously he's not consulting with Brian Ferentz on this depth chart, or Coy Cronk would be listed one, because that's what Brian Ferentz said the day it got released. Or the day after it got released. So
where do you think he goes, left guard?
Listen, I think you and I both said this. There are five guys that I could foresee playing guard. I don't think it's going to be Britt because of this. I really do think that Iowa is worried that Tyler Linderbaum is going to the NFL this year, basically. Excuse me, after this year. He's already getting a lot of hype preseason for being a first-round draft pick as a center. Of course, he's had a tremendous freshman year last year, which, can you believe he's going to be a sophomore this year and people think he's going to go to the draft already? And he wasn't even a natural center coming to school. He was a defensive lineman. But this is his third year in the program. I really think they want to keep Britt as his backup to really get him ready. I mean, you can run him at guard. I'm sure they are running Britt at guard. And Alex, I think he was a guy who I had said I'd predicted that Britt might be one of the starters. Kyler Schott's a walk-on. I don't think that really matters. He's listed number one. I'm surprised about Noah Fenske. I'm surprised that he's listed there. But again, if Banwart got forgotten, maybe that's where Banwart would fall at that spot at right guard. I think, right. I mean, to you guys, is right guard, left guard pretty much interchangeable? Or what are your thoughts on the interior of the line?
I mean, to me, I've always considered the guards interchangeable, but I'm not a professional. I'm sure there are differences for each side, but to me, it seems pretty much interchangeable.
So Noah, where does...
Noah, when you're playing football, you're able to play both positions equally well.
You mean when we're running a three-man offensive line?
Yes, you play them all.
You know, I wouldn't be so much good at that anymore, given that I've lost some weight. I'd be pushed around by guys bigger than me now.
So what is your natural position now, Noah?
I don't know. Tight end, maybe?
Fullback. He's a fullback.
Still?
Yeah.
At 190 pounds.
Than the people we play with, yes.
Could you be the third heaviest person
on the field still?
Micaiah, my question is, what do you weigh? Are you 200?
190.
You're both 190?
He's 195, I'm 190.
Could either one of you, or both of you, truck stick Austin if you were out in the field?
Probably.
I do it on the basketball.
Do it on the basketball. All right, back to substance here.
Before we leave that subject, I would like to see you truck stick Austin on any field or court, and while you're doing it, say the words truck stick. And do it repeatedly.
Truck stick. All right. Noah, what's the backup left guard? Can you say his name, please?
Luke Empen.
What's going to be his nickname when he ends up starting in Iowa?
I don't know.
Luke Empanada.
Empanada.
You like empanadas, Micaiah?
I don't know what they are. I've never had one.
You never had an empanada? Alex, what about you? You like empanadas? They're basically like a, aren't they basically like a fried pocket of meat and cheese and stuff, Alex?
I can't say that I've had one either.
It sounds good.
Yeah, fried meat, cheese. Okay. So, interior of the line, we've got Cody Ince, Luke Empin at left guard, center, Tyler Linderbaum, Justin Britt, right guard, Kyler Schott, Noah Fenske, Mark Kallenberger, and Coy Kronk at right tackle, although Brian Ferentz did say that Kronk would be the starter if games were occurring 2 weeks ago. And we're assuming that Cole Banward would probably be the starter at right guard, although if they like Schott enough, maybe he's the starter at left. I don't know. That'll be interesting to see, and maybe they rotate guys in and out. The good news there, you did mention, Noah, the lack of experience. However, with five guys rotating and an extra year of hopefully, they have been doing strength and conditioning. It's not been the same without spring practice, and that does concern me, and we'll talk about that a little later as well. But the good news is this competition, we saw how bad guard play was last year. The increase of competition at those two guard spots hopefully will reap results. I know, may the best two guys win. Three of the five guys aren't going to play. So to me, that's plenty of competition to hopefully produce positive results.
Hey, can I butt in here for a second? I just got some breaking news from ESPN, which has a bearing on the game this coming week. The Purdue Boilermakers say football coach Jeff Brohm has presumed positive coronavirus test.
Well, that should be interesting. Alex, your initial thoughts to that?
I mean, do we need him to play a game?
I mean, look, well, that's not going to impact if the game is played.
Right. The question would be how much of the team around him would also get COVID potentially.
Well, remember, let's remember this, and I know we haven't talked about this with all four of us on here. The Big Ten, and this would be a good time to bring it up, the Big Ten instituted quite a few different measures that other conferences are not implementing right now, okay? One of them is rapid-fire antigen testing, okay? And I'm going to read you a quote. Let's see if I can find it here. I believe it was Teddy Greenstein that found this quote. Boy, now I don't know if I have it here. You guys can keep talking. Keep talking about something.
I forgot what your question was because I got sidetracked. What you asked before I brought up the Purdue coach.
Yeah, basically what he said, what Teddy Greenstein said is he was quoting a doctor at Northwestern who said that the antigen testing that Iowa is, that the Big Ten is using is so not, again, I know, Alex, you say, well, the PCR testing is more accurate. What antigen does is it's such a strong indicator of a positive or negative that it can detect a positive, according to this Northwestern doctor, it can detect a positive case before that case were to become contagious. Which means what happened with Jeff Brohm today is he tested positive because they're testing these guys daily. He tested positive from the antigen, but now they're waiting on am I right in saying, is that what the article said, Noah? They're waiting on a PCR test to confirm. Am I right?
I just looked it up. Yes. He's currently at home in isolation. Yeah. He's undergoing a PCR test to confirm the results of an antigen test.
So that's why we need to have so much more faith in what the Big Ten is doing, because This antigen testing, Noah, is they're able to test every single day, and if somebody tests positive, they're not allowed into the facility. Okay? They are not allowed in the facility. And again, there's a possibility that test, again, since they're doing it every day, that they can catch some of these cases before there's any chance of them exposing really anybody to the contagion, and then they confirm it after they're in isolation. So in other words, it takes away the contact tracing issue that's been a problem across college football. Basically, all of the postponements, including some of the major programs, there haven't been a whole lot of major programs that have had games postponed, but some of them have, including Baylor, Notre Dame, TCU. But again, the difference is now they're able to get these cases early, and some of them may be false positives, but until they know for sure from the PCR testing, they're able to isolate these individuals like they're isolating Brom. So
right.
I'm assuming that, again, Brom, if he tested positive today, he probably, I'm assuming this, he probably was not around anybody when he was contagious, because he may not have even been contagious at the time he tested positive. Does that make sense?
Yeah, based on what you're talking about with the antigen test, if it was detected before he was, there's a possibility it was detected before he was contagious, and so he isolates before he's contagious, and then they can double check with the other test.
Which is more accurate. PCR is going to be more accurate, but PCR, my understanding of the PCR testing is it needs basically a greater sample size, if that makes sense. It needs a stronger case of COVID. There are levels of COVID. There are levels of infection. What?
It's slightly less sensitive than the antigen test.
Right. But the point is, if there's
back, so you might have more of a, I don't know what you'd call it, more viral load by the time you get the PCR back than
right.
you did at the time of the antigen test.
But
which
again,
would be the point in making repeated tests over the span of a couple of days to see how the results come back.
You test everybody with antigen every day, and theoretically, I'm not saying things can't happen still.
Yeah,
but no,
theoretically, false positives and false negatives happen.
Yeah, but theoretically, you test everybody every day, and then whenever a red flag pops up, you isolate that person. It's not going to spread. You see what I'm saying? It's not going to spread within the confines of the facility, and that's what is good about what we've got going on in the Big Ten.
And it's not perfect. It's never going to be perfect, but it is a pretty good system that they've got worked out, assuming that the tests are mostly accurate.
So real quickly, before we bounce back to depth chart, Alex, your thoughts on the impact if Jeff Brohm is out Saturday?
Well, I mean, in the case like Noah was saying, if there were to be others that he infected or others that infected him, obviously that's, I guess, I don't know how their testing protocol is, but you would assume that that would have been mentioned if others had tested positive today. It's probably unlikely that you'll see more in the next couple of days, but it is possible. But let's just say it's just him. Obviously, you're not going to have your coach on the field, assuming you still play. Which I don't see why they wouldn't. But, you know, that's a big deal. It's just like if a coach gets a suspension. You know, football, I think more in terms of basketball, I guess, for that kind of thing. But football might have less impact maybe just because you have, you know, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, different people. And I think the responsibility is more delegated out, I guess, than in basketball. Maybe a head coach is a little bit more responsible for everything. I'm not really sure. I've never been part of either team. But yeah, I mean, it'll definitely have an impact. I mean, to not have your coach there in any sport is going to have an impact. So whether or not that'll change the outcome of the game, you know, it's impossible to say. I think it definitely will have an impact.
Well, Nick Saban, remember Nick Saban of Alabama tested positive, I believe, on Wednesday. And SEC protocol said he had to have 3 consecutive negative tests for that first test to be considered a false positive. He was tested Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. All came back negative, and he coached against Georgia on Saturday night. So, you know, very possible that Brohm is going to end up coaching. Now, I'm not saying he will, but that's a possibility. And if not, I still, like I said, with this antigen testing, it's likely that he's going to be the only one that's positive from that infection specifically, if that makes sense.
So that tested positive, was that an antigen test?
Yes.
That was on an antigen test. He's.
Okay. I'm not aware of what tests they're using. I know the earlier ones they had earlier this year were, I think, in the range of like 70-80% accurate, which is not that accurate. So,
no, these are saliva. These are saliva-based testing that Illinois, University of Illinois, literally just released in the month of August. So,
have you heard figures on accuracy?
I mean, everything I've heard has been spectacular about the accuracy and effectiveness of this type of antigen testing.
No numbers.
I mean, you can look up numbers if you want.
I looked, but I couldn't find them.
Yeah. So here is what I.
He's in the range of like 99%. So.
Northwestern Director of Sports Medicine Jeff Mahanis says antigen testing is so good it can detect a level of virus thought to be below the level of infectivity. And then Teddy Greenstein expounds on this. He says, so positive cases can be identified and isolated before a player is contagious. This is huge. So,
but that's a different thing than false positives. That's sensitivity versus actual accuracy of the test.
Yeah, I know. That's why I said I don't know the numbers on that. But again...
Well, that'll be interesting to see how it plays out, because I hadn't followed the Saban situation, and, you know, he was kind of it was a big deal when he tested positive, because he's an old man, you know, and so I think we'll probably see more of that. I've heard of, you know, a lot of people touting how good the antigen testing is for different reasons, but I don't know if accuracy is one of them.
Well, I've never heard anything about 60-70%. Inaccurate. That just seems bogus to me. That may have been with early tests, but testing has come a long way, and I seriously doubt that the Illinois test that they literally just released in August would be that bad. So, like I said, everything that the Big Ten, I think we all criticize how the Big Ten handled things. They did a very good job handling things on the way back in. We'll give them that. They were very transparent. That was the main issue with a lot of people. There was no transparency to give reasons why they were canceling the season. Of course, they were a lot more transparent on the way back into the season. So, but regardless of that, let's get back to the depth chart. Noah, where are we heading next? What position?
I don't know. Where do you want to go next?
Well, we can look at the tackle positions. I think that's probably... I know we've already talked a little bit about it, but Kallenberger, Kronk, Jackson, and Plum. Plum, people forget, Jack Plum was the backup to Alaric Jackson last year, so I anticipate that they are basically grooming him to be Jackson's replacement. So you hope that he's a native of Green Bay. You hope he's come of age and is starting to round out to be a guy who could step in and be a starting Big Ten tackle if needed. What are your guys' thoughts on the Kallenberger Kronk thing?
I mean, to me, either way, I feel like Kronk should be in a starting position anywhere. You made a pretty good point about Kronk potentially moving inside somewhere, especially with the lack of depth they've got on the guard positions. But either way, you could probably move Kronk or Kallenberger in and have two really good tackles and then have one of them be inside to help with the guards a little bit. So I think either way they play it, it'll work out pretty well for them.
Alex, can we agree that if Kronk and Jackson, they're both on the Outland Trophy watch list, they're both projected to play on Sundays, can we agree those are two bookends at tackle?
Well, I don't know. I mean, depends on how accurate the depth chart is. I was surprised by the Kallenberger thing. And, you know, as far as moving him into guard, it's not something I've really seen that much. And I wasn't that surprised that you didn't see that. But I was surprised that Kronk wasn't, you know, starting right tackle.
But again, that Brian Ferentz debunked that and said that wasn't accurate.
Yeah. Well,
so
wait, I guess.
I'm just saying, we know what we're getting from Alaric Jackson. He was projected at one point to be a first-round draft pick. Coy Kronk started 4 years at Indiana.
So I guess the big thing for Jackson then is just to stay healthy.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's, let's be honest. That's, isn't that always the key on the offensive line?
Yeah.
It's just keeping guys in there. The good news is at guard, I mean, that's the thing. I actually think that's the thing. I don't know how good they can be at guard, but I think they have a lot of depth at guard. Does that make sense, Micaiah? I think
that
they
makes sense.
I don't know.
It's not really top heavy, but they've got a lot of guys that are around the same level, so you're not losing much if somebody goes down.
And I don't know how much you lose at tackle. I mean, listen, I don't want to lose Kronk or Jackson, but Plum has been here for, I think this is his third year. He's a third year sophomore, I believe. And at the other tackle position, you've got Kallenberger, who, like I said, I think he's a natural tackle. And he's probably going to be a tackle next year anyways. I'm not advocating for injuries, believe me, but I just don't know if I'm so concerned about tackle play or offensive line play in general as it relates to depth. I am concerned about quality on the interior. And I think that'll probably come up when we talk about our concerns and our excitements later on. Let's move over to tight end. Of course, Iowa lost some depth there. Or they've lost depth there last couple of years. Of course, last year they lose Nate Weeding. He was a guy who was a very solid blocker at tight end for Iowa. He is gone. We also lose Noah Fant and T.J. Hawkinson from two years back. So there's been a lot of talent that's ran through Iowa, not to mention George Kittle in 2016. That goes without saying. Which, by the way, I think the 49ers are going to be playing here in about 10 minutes. So you look at tight end, Alex, and Sam Laporta really seemed to come of age as the season went on last year. What did you see from Sam, and what are your thoughts on the tight end spot this year?
Well, I wasn't overly surprised to see him on top there in the depth chart, which I think is a good, you know, pleasant surprise, if you call it a surprise. But, you know, he did show that he's a capable pass catcher, and that's something we kind of got spoiled with in prior years for quite a, you know, we had three incredible tight ends in a row. And then last year it was kind of, you know, a down year, I guess, compared to that. But Laporta really looked like he could step into that role as to being a guy who can really catch passes. So it's nice to see him there. I think we talked about Beyer being a guy who's probably going to be able to get his just because of the attention Laporta is probably going to attract. So I could see both of them having good seasons. But yeah, Laporta definitely seems like the guy right now.
How big is that though to have a fifth year senior playing at backup at tight end, a guy who's played quite a bit already?
Yeah, we know he's solid. I mean, he's not the greatest pass catcher. He's not the, you know, greatest at getting separation, that type of thing, but he's very solid, and especially for a team like Ferentz runs, he's actually a pretty good fit. So that's why, you know, the fact that he's a backup, you've got two pretty good tight ends there, so they could even go with both of them at once and be pretty comfortable.
Micaiah, at one time people compared Sean Beyer to Noah Fant.
Yeah.
Are we buying into that at all? Alex thinks that's ridiculous that I even say that, but I mean, are we buying into that notion at all that he could be that type of a hybrid? I mean, I don't think he's the hybrid. I mean, we see what Fant's even doing at the next level now. He's one of the better tight ends in the league right now. Can we agree on that? That Noah Fant is probably one of the better tight ends in the NFL right now?
He definitely has as much potential as anybody.
Well, I mean, no, I'm not talking about not potential. I'm talking about current performance. Look at his numbers. Look at his numbers this year. He's a top 10 tight end.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but again, what can Sean Beyer do? You know, we all remember the year of everybody was big on Fant, and Hawkinson came in 2017 and proved a lot of people wrong. Noah, I think most of us remember Beyer for what happened in 2018 when Ryan Grisonde, I keep saying Grisonde, Kyle Gronewig was supposed to yell Peter, Peter, Peter on the punt, and he didn't. And Beyer blocked his guy, and the ball went straight into Beyer, and Wisconsin recovered it and got a touchdown out of it. That faux pas is what people remember Sean Beyer's name for, and I don't think, you know, he's had injury problems, he's had a hard time staying on the field, but this might be his opportunity, Noah, especially with all the hype around Laporta, to really shine. And boy, if they could get these tight ends to be big weapons, this offense is going to be really, really hard to stop.
And the thing is about what you mentioned about that play from a couple of years ago, yeah, everybody thinks of that, but something that I've heard from a podcast that I listen to, and it makes a lot of sense to me, is you can't judge somebody by their best day or their worst day. So that was probably one of his biggest goofs that he's had in his career, one of the things that he would want to take back. But you can't judge a guy based on one play. So, I mean, going forward,
I don't even think he's a second string
tight end. He should get plenty of playing time. It's Iowa football. They like to run a lot of big twin tight end sets, you know, single back formation, I formation, get multiple tight ends involved. He'll have an opportunity. And with his experience, it should work out pretty well for him.
And I really don't think that 2018, him getting, you know, running into the punt, I don't think that was even his fault. I think that was probably Gronewig's fault for not communicating that better to him.
Gronewig's an easy scapegoat, isn't he?
Huh?
Gronewig's an easy scapegoat because he screwed up. And
yeah, he remember running back and he just lost the ball?
Yeah.
So, I mean, no, I do. I think he was probably the guy to blame, unfortunately. So I just think this can be an interesting tandem. I'm not making any predictions that they're going to be, you know, what Hawkinson and Fant were. But it kind of leads us into our next...
That's a pretty high bar to live up to.
It is. But that kind of leads us into our next position group, and that is wide receiver. One thing that we haven't all got a chance to talk about, I did talk to Alex about it, but Oliver Martin transferring to Nebraska. What a journey that kid's been on. He grows up in Iowa City, plays high school ball there, goes to Michigan to play for Harbaugh, comes back to Iowa City to play for Ferentz, and now is in Nebraska playing for Scott Frost. A lot of Iowa fans wondered why it didn't work out in Iowa City. We may have gotten an indication of why it didn't work out. Brandon Smith, Amir Smith-Marset, Tyrone Tracy, Nico Reganey, they all commented just 2 weeks ago at how well Buffalo transfer Charlie Jones is playing in practice. Charlie Jones, a kid that you probably remember, I brought him up last year thinking, I thought it was a little odd that nobody was talking about him. He was a kid who I think had over 400 yards his 1 year of really solid playing time at Buffalo, several touchdowns, transferred here as a walk-on. I think that's probably why he didn't get a whole lot of attention. But we've heard nothing but good stuff from his fellow receivers, and apparently, according to multiple sources, he's been getting a lot of run with the number one guys. So maybe that's a fifth guy on the depth chart that we don't even see on here, not to mention a senior, fourth-year senior in Max Cooper, who we see down at the punt return line, which doesn't surprise me because he handled punt returns last year. But how strong, Micaiah, is this wide receiver core? If you think back to 5, 6 years ago, or even more recently, 3 or 4 years ago, year after year after year, what do we keep saying about the wide receiver core?
They need better hands.
Could this be the year that somebody's just going to be unstoppable? Right? It was either Jay Sheil, Adrian Falconer, Oliver Martin. Let's see. Who else am I missing? Devontae Young. It just never really happened. Mackay, how strong can this receiver core be with Brandon Smith, Amir Smith-Marset?
They need a third. They have two really good wide receivers. They need a third guy to step up and solidify the wide receiver position. If they can do that, this will be a good wide receiver core.
Alex, your thoughts on that comment?
Well, I mean, I think they've already had guys that have played well. I mean, Reganey was solid last year.
Reganey, you got to remember, Mackay, Reganey led Iowa in receiving in receptions last year. And we're not even talking about Tyrone Tracy. Noah, help us out here.
But with Smith, talk about Marcel, the wide receivers, Tracy, or with Micaiah?
Well, with both. Just call him out. Call him out for what just happened, for the comment he just made.
I don't even know what to say to that.
So you agree? Are you on the same page as me, Micaiah, or Noah?
I think this is probably, at least from my preseason predictions for the past however long we've been doing this, this is the most comfortable I think I've had wide receiver core.
And but for him to say that, for him to say there's only two guys, can you address that for a moment?
I mean, sure, there are two top of the line receivers,
NFL caliber guys.
There are two good receivers in Brandon Smith and Amir Smith-Marset. But I'm not going to write off guys like Tracy and Reganey, who have shown that they can help a lot, and especially since they're not the primary options, they're definitely good for what the team needs them to do.
And, of course, we've heard a lot of good things as well about Calvin Lockett, who is not on this depth chart, although I think we're going to see a whole lot more three wide receiver sets this year. So you may see times, especially if there is a COVID case or an injury, where you see Calvin Lockett or, what's his first name? I don't have it in front of me now. I'm trying to do this off of memory, Noah. Quavon Matthews. He's a guy from Largo, Florida, that is also in the mix at wide receiver. But I'm just saying,
can I just say, if they're going to run more three wide receiver sets, wouldn't that mean less blockers for their first down running plays? And how they always run on first down, wouldn't that mean one less blocker? But don't you remember the first down? Like every first down is a running play up the middle that goes to
We will have no first down run. No.
Behind the chains is where we are most comfortable.
So is this, let me ask a question as we continue to break down the offense. Alex, is this the year that Iowa finally opens the offense up?
My brain.
I think listen, they have the talent. They have the firepower. I mean, regardless of what Micaiah says, Brandon Smith, Amir Smith-Marset, Tyrone Tracy, Nico Reganey, Sean Beyer, Sam Laporta, Tyler Goodson. We haven't gotten to the running backs yet. Tyler Goodson, Ivory Kelly Martin, Mekhi Sargent. That's not even talking about any of the young guys like Charlie Jones, Calvin Lockett that we've heard good things about. Alex?
Yeah, I mean, this is by far the most stacked receiving core I've ever seen at Iowa. But you do have another important person on the field named Kirk Ferentz. So as far as opening up the offense, I think it might happen a little bit. But if it were to go completely flip the other way pass heavy, I'd be more shocked than anything I've ever seen in Iowa.
Well, but isn't this the year to do that? If there's any year, I'm not saying they're going to go to a pass first offense, but if there is ever a year where, you know, you need some trickeration, you need some flea flickers, you need some deep balls, you need to pop that cork off the wine bottle, so to speak, you're going to do it this year. All right. Cause you got talent over the top. You got a Big Ten quarterback that obviously Ferentz is very high on, and Spencer Petras. You've got two talented tackles, potential top three-round draft picks, and then you've got a starting center who's a potential first-round draft pick. Isn't this the year to let that cork fly out of that wine bottle?
This just in, Kirk Ferentz is running a spread offense this year. Source, Corey Bratta.
Five wide receivers.
Hey, they could do it. And we haven't even mentioned Max Cooper, who we know is a guy who can be a filler at wide receiver.
Corey, I'm going to go back to what Alex said just a minute ago. You have to remember that last man on the field over there chewing away at that gum. And what he has to say about all of this.
Run the ball. Up the middle.
So
you gotta establish the run.
All right, so that brings us to the run.
Let's talk 1 minute, 59 seconds. Need ball.
Fullback, Monty Potabom, Turner Palisard. Is anybody here concerned about fullback? I think we can all agree they basically just plug and play there. It's just a plug and play every year.
It's just every year.
And they're going to figure that position out fine. And they actually ran a lot less fullback sets last year, so they're going to be totally fine there. And that's where they know of, if you're whoever asked that question, that's where you're going to get the third wide receiver, was when they take that fullback off the field.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
But you are right. That does hurt your run blocking if you're going to be running without a fullback. But see, I think the offensive talent for Iowa this year is capable, if they buy into it, of being able to line up, and they don't necessarily always need play action. You don't need play action with a fullback. You can run out of the shotgun with Goodson out wide, or three wide receivers and two tight ends standing up. Three tight ends. Yeah, no, three wide receivers, two tight ends standing up without Goodson on the field, without Sargent, without Kelly Martin. And you can tell the opponent, look, I'm going to throw the ball and there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, of course there's something they can do about it. Not complete the pass. You know,
well,
they can, the other team can play defense against that. There is something they can do about that.
Well, that is, but I'm saying, okay, look at Wisconsin, for instance. Think about how many years they've just had plug-and-play offensive linemen. You remember 2018 at Kinnick, and they ran like, remember they put in seven offensive linemen? And you knew exactly what they were going to do. They're going to hand out that ball to Jonathan Taylor, and they're going to run those big boys, and they're just running people over, and they get six, seven yards a carry. And ain't nothing you could do about it. Okay, you could say, well, we play defense. Listen, Iowa loaded the box. Were there even any receivers on the field? So you got seven linemen, you got a running back, a quarterback, that's nine people, and probably a fullback in there, that's 10. So they had one wide receiver.
You're running a goal line set.
But they weren't even running a goal line set because these weren't tight ends. These were offensive linemen. This was like kicking a field goal. And they were just handing off to him, and he was just blundering through. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying Iowa's going to be able to do it with that level of dominance. But if they can utilize these skill position players out wide and, you know, do so. I mean, think about how much that would open up the offense, Alex, if you can – just basically, they're going to have some trickeration. I get it, but and I'm not calling play action trickeration, but they're going to have both. But just imagine if they're able to just
for
literally
Iowa
line
play
up.
Action is trickeration.
Say that again.
For Iowa, play action is trickeration.
Well, I'm talking trickeration like fake field goals, fake punts, which we have seen from Iowa. We've actually seen that a lot, although last year was very quiet in that regard. But I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Noah? Do you think this wide receiver core, along with the tight ends, can be good enough to where they can maybe make it more of a even battle as opposed to 60-40 run or 75-25 run?
Are they good enough? Yeah, I believe they are. But I'm going to make the same point again. Do I think it's going to happen? Probably not.
So you all just think that Kirk Ferentz is just completely unwilling to change?
Corey, there have been good wide receiver cores in the past, and what has Iowa been in the Ferentz era?
Yeah, but first
team.
However, let me counter that with saying, when is the last time? Give me a wide receiving core that was as good as this wide receiving core.
I'm not going to say that it was as good as this one.
Well,
but there have
give me one to compare.
Well, Corey, you're the expert. You tell me. What would your pick be?
I mean, the only other wide receiving core that I could say was even close to
Koulianos McNutt.
Yeah, Koulianos McNutt, and they had Colin Sandeman that same year. Well, that same time period, Trey Strauss. That was a good wide receiving core. I'd probably say probably just as good, if not better, than this year. But this year could be better than that year. I don't know. But what I'm saying is, in 2009, all I remember about 2009, besides the fact that I can remember almost every game because that was just a memorable season. What I remember most about 2009 was how many times Iowa took the top off the defense. And how many times Stanzi threw the ball downfield? Now, he threw a lot of picks in 2009, but they also went, 11-2, 2009. Won an Orange Bowl. So, I'm just saying, you know, and then I guess 2010, you know, they failed. That was a year that they had everybody back, basically, and couldn't get it done. So, I get what you're saying, but again, it does fall on the quarterback, and we're going to talk quarterback here in a moment, but I just feel like one of Stanley's bigger issues, I think we can all agree on this, was his inability to consistently throw the deep ball. Micaiah, can you agree with that? He never really came of age as it related to the deep ball.
Yeah, he had actually really good accuracy in the short and mid range, and he completed some really tough passes there, but he'd overshoot or undershoot his receivers up and down the field.
Alex, your thoughts?
Overshoot. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, here's the thing is, like, you know, Ferentz is not thinking that way as far as opening up the offense to the pass game right now, partially for two reasons. Three reasons. First of all, he's Ferentz. Secondly, he's got very good running backs here. And third, he's got a brand new quarterback. So I'm not saying that couldn't happen this year, but I don't think there's any thought in his mind right now that he's going to go comparatively pass heavy to previous years. I don't know that he even changes much at all to begin with. Now, I could definitely see that changing, you know, once they start seeing how good these guys are, how well they're playing together anyway with the new quarterback and how well the offensive line is protecting. So I could definitely see it go more that direction, but I don't think it's going to be something you should expect right away.
I get what you're saying about they've got a good running back core and they've got a new quarterback, but they also lose two of the best wide receivers that they've had. And you really think he's just going to say, well, we're not comfortable yet with, you know, we've got a true sophomore at running back that we're really high on, so we'll just let these two wide receivers just, you know, kick the dust.
Which two are you talking about?
Smith and Smith-Marset.
Oh, I don't understand what you're saying.
I'm saying
they were gone this year or something.
No, I'm saying they're going to be gone next year. So if he doesn't open it up a little bit, you're wasting some of the best talent you've had.
Yeah. And I guess that is how much is a little bit. I see it as being a little bit, at least to start out. It could become more.
I suppose at this point, knowing that it is an Iowa program, the goal would be what? At least close to 50-50 for run versus pass?
The most ideal offense is probably 50-50.
Yeah, I want 50-50. I'm not saying 60-40 pass, but there have been times where I feel like Iowa's closer to 70-30, and I don't think that's... I know that... Okay, listen, Iowa would be okay with 70-30 if they had a decent run game, but if you look at the numbers over the past... 20 years, there have been like two seasons where Iowa averaged more than 3.5, 4 yards a carry. Okay. They don't historically run the ball well, contrary to what people think. They just don't.
It's out of volume, not efficiency.
Well, I guess, but yet they win. That's what's weird. Isn't that weird, Noah?
I guess it's Iowa, due to how they play. They play a very,
I guess,
you know, make them beat us, we're not going to beat ourselves kind of game.
Yeah, and that's true. I guess that's a good point. It's amazing. Think about some of the battles that Iowa has lost out on, Alex, right, as far as recruiting at running back. You think about losing out on Melvin Gordon. He was a guy who was initially coming to Iowa, ended up at Wisconsin, ended up being one of the greatest running backs in Big Ten history, and now is a starter in the league. You look at a guy like, what's the kid down that was ended up going to Arizona State, Eno Benjamin. He's in the league right now. Well, just set all kinds of records at Arizona State. Iowa's only had one marquee running back in the Ferentz era. And it was not Akram Wadley. It was not LaShawn Daniels. It was not Jordan Kanziri. It wasn't even Marcus Coker. I think Coker probably could have been pretty elite had he not had issues towards the end of his career. But I would say Sean Green is the only guy, and we really got one good year out of him. I'm just saying, imagine what Iowa could be if you have a dominant run game. And that's the misconception with Ferentz teams, in my belief. As we move to quarterback here, we talked about losing Stanley. Of course, they're going to be losing a lot of leadership with Nate Stanley graduating, moving on. He's now with the Vikings organization. I want to show you a video clip, and I want you three to give me your reaction to this. This is 2018 Iowa Penn State, and Makai, we talked a little bit about the deep ball and how Iowa has been deficient in that regard. Take a look at this couple plays here from Nate Stanley, and I'm not trying to bash Nate. He's going to go down as one of the better quarterbacks at Iowa in history because of his numbers, but this is Penn State, Iowa, second quarter. It's 3rd and 1. Iowa's up 14-7. All right. 3rd and 1. Y'all can see this, right?
Yep.
It's 3rd and 1 around midfield. And take a look at this. This is a beautiful play call. Beautiful play call from Brian Ferentz. Listen and, well, don't enjoy.
Behind Kelly, the fullback. Stanley still got it. Got a throw, had a man wide open. It was Hawkinson. And Stanley knows he missed one.
I can't tell you what it takes to make a fake like this. Watch Stanley. He's holding the ball. He's not looking behind him. That's like the bullfighter waiting for the bull to come out of the ring, okay? And sometimes you turn around, a guy's so wide open, you try to throw a perfect pass, and you overthrow him. You got to take a little air out of that and just put it on him.
Anybody? I mean...
That's physically painful.
Dude. I remember. Do you remember that? I can remember. I literally can remember exactly how I felt when I saw that pass, Alex. I just remember. I'm just like, oh my God. I mean, you realize there was nobody within 10, 15 yards of Hawkinson? There was nobody in sight.
Wide open. And that wasn't even that deep of a pass. That was like a 20 yard pass.
And I felt bad. You know, I feel bad for Nate. Obviously, he's not trying to miss him like that, but it wasn't even close. He wasn't even close to hitting him on the money. All right.
Can I just say, you mentioned that Stanley was with the Vikings. I remember, and I double-checked this, in your messages that you sent to us, I think it was about a month ago at this point, Stanley was cut by the Vikings. Or did he get re-signed and I missed that?
He's on the practice squad now.
Okay.
So he is with the organization, but he's... Correct, yep.
Okay.
They waived him and then re-signed the practice squad.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying.
So second example here, also Penn State game. As you can see, Alex, and you know what play this is. First down and goal. Iowa's down 30-24. They need a touchdown to take the lead, potentially win in the fourth quarter. It's first and goal from inside the five. Inside the five. First and goal. And as great as Stanley was as a leader and numbers-wise, this was absolutely an error, a mental lapse. He changes the play call. Tries to get the call in to Noah Fant and the rest of the receivers, then sees the play clock down to 2, panics, snaps it, tries to throw it, and Fant's not looking for the ball. And, of course, you know what ends up happening.
Downhill, pound it kind of back. You know, they've got 3 guys that are kind of scat back, but...
You have to hit skip the ad.
Oh, hold on a second. We have to listen to an ad so I can actually watch a 10-second clip. Gosh. Oh Lord!
This is why right, I here we go. YouTube.
There we go. Oh, never mind. Never mind. It's another one.
2 ads.
Oh, all right. Here we go. Maybe.
Warren Young at 220 is their biggest guy. He's in there now.
That's Fant in the slot. Fant wasn't ready. Fant didn't seem to snap the ball, and it's picked off. Nick Scott with the interception. Noah Fant was not ready. He was still on the line of scrimmage long after Iowa had snapped the football. And Stanley tried to go to him.
Nate Stanley tried to change the play, Steve. He's at the line of scrimmage trying to change the play. It got loud down here by the student section. You could see the Iowa coaching staff wondering what was going on. He's trying to change the play. And they're trying to snap it before the play clock got to 0-2. That's why he was in such a hurry. But you got to manage that situation better and not be risky with the football.
And, Brian, I'm standing probably 20 yards from where he was, and I'm watching Stanley's eyes, and he realizes he started yelling, kill, kill, kill. He looked up at the clock and saw we only had about 2 seconds left, and then that just rushed everything.
All right. Anything to say? Which one was more painful? Which one was more painful, Alex?
Well, that last one was worse just because of the game situation, but the first one was more
egregious.
More pathetic. It's like any of us could have made that pass. Seriously, I'm not joking. I think any of us could have made that pass.
Oh, I could have made that pass to Hawkinson. Would you agree with that, Micaiah? I could have made that pass.
I would have underthrown it just enough to hit the tight end.
That's good.
I can only throw a football 25 yards. So.
That would have been perfect.
Yeah,
it was a 20-yard pass.
What is Iowa getting with Spencer Petras? Well, they're getting a quarterback that broke Jared Goff's high school records in at his high school in California. A prolific quarterback that threw very few interceptions. Alex, I believe his completion percentage across his high school career was over 70%, compared to a very, very unimpressive completion percentage, I believe, for Stanley. Am I right in saying that, Alex? I think he was closer to 50% during his career as a Hawkeye and as a high schooler.
Yeah, Stanley's stats were not impressive in high school.
So, of course, Kirk Ferentz very rarely names his starting quarterback back in January, but he did this year, which I thought was an indication that he's pretty high on Spencer Petras. And Alex, I think you watched that interview with Jordan Bohannon, his podcast that he did with Spencer Petras. What were your thoughts on just how Petras carries himself? Seems like he is a super cool, calm, collected guy, very, very mature, very well spoken, and just seems like, and again, we're hearing this as well, probably going to be a pretty darn good leader.
Yeah, he seems very confident. Seems like a guy who's fairly comfortable where he's at. And yeah, I mean, as far as leading, I think he just seems solid mentally to hear him talk. It's hard to know how that'll translate over, but he did seem like a guy who's going to not get rattled possibly when he's on the field. And it seems like if you heard him talk, you'd think maybe he's been at Iowa for longer than he has. That was my impression.
And, of course, backing him up, Alex Padilla. Is that how you pronounce that, Noah?
I have no idea.
I think it's Padilla. I just wanted to say Padilla. Alex, we hope we don't have to see Alex Padilla this year, but with COVID, you never know. But he is, I didn't realize this until the other day. Alex Padilla had an offer from Georgia. I mean, Georgia's what, number two in the three in the country? So, I mean,
yeah, they're one of those, yeah.
So, I mean, that's maybe, he's a guy who probably knows the system by now. Alex, if Petras goes out, maybe a guy who can at least come in and be an effective game manager.
Yeah, I really know nothing about him, but I mean, to get an offer from Georgia's no small deal. And Ferentz, what I've heard, seems to have confidence in him. And, we haven't really heard anything as far as there being a competition for quarterback. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that could just be because Petras is that good. So let's hope that's what it is.
Running back. Let's talk a little bit about running back. Tyler Goodson, Mekhi Sargent, Ivory Kelly Martin. Alex, this is as good as the running back corps has been, and yours as well. Am I just being a homer, Micaiah? Am I just being a homer? This is the best running back core Iowa's had since probably at least 2015 when they had Wadley and LaShawn Daniels. And I could argue it's better because they have more depth this year with three guys who have all started games. Goodson, remember, he started the second half of last year. Sargent was the starter towards the beginning of the year. And Ivory Kelly Martin was a starter a couple of years back to start the season.
Well, they have a lot of depth. So that's going to help a lot if someone gets injured. Especially since Iowa runs the ball so much, they like to use multiple running backs, which isn't unheard of on heavy offenses. Anyways, it does seem to be a pretty good quality running back core. Is it one of the best? Probably. I don't know if it's the best.
Alex, Tyler Goodson or Akram Wadley, who would you take right now? Not thinking about what happened with Wadley and Iowa this summer, the fallout with everything, but I'm just talking purely as a football player, Wadley or Goodson right now.
Well, I mean, it's hard to say because we already know how Wadley turned out, as at his last season at Iowa and when he left the NFL. I think right now I would take Goodson just because he has more, I think he has the potential to be better than Wadley. Wadley was probably a little bit more quick, but he never developed much of any power.
Couldn't run between the tackles.
Yeah, he was just a skinny guy. I mean, for a running back.
He would dance around on the outside and make people miss, but if he got touched, he was done, basically.
Yeah, well, I think he was, what, 185 or something like that? So, I mean, you can't run in between those guys. You're talking about guys who are 300 pounds, and you weigh, it's like, not much less than, or not much more than me. You know, this is not a guy who's got that much weight going for him. And I think Goodson already looks like he's probably a little bit better after contact. And he still has a long way ahead of him too. So as far as just based on potential and what we've seen, I'd take Goodson at this point.
What about Mekhi Sargent, Noah? His ability as kind of maybe a more of a goal line running back, but had a lot of time, played really well in that 2018 game versus Penn State. He's a guy who's had so much time as a starter. How about having him as a backup, as a senior?
I mean, we're going to be talking about this all year with all three of these running backs. I think the experience, specifically between Sargent and Kelly Martin, and just the talent between all three of them. I am very high on this running back core. I think this is probably one of the best strengths on the team altogether. I mean, sure, there are other good parts. We talked about it. The tackles are really good. The wide receiver core is really good. You got some hope with Spencer Petras and seeing what he's going to do.
Your kickers are probably the best kicker in the country, and Keith Duncan. And
right.
Ferentz has always been high on Shudak. I think if Duncan were to get hurt, I don't think we've got to worry about Shudak.
But to me, of course, I'm always a big fan of the running backs. I think this is potentially one of the best points about this team as a whole is the running back core.
Boy, again, how big would it be if you could get good guard play? I mean, literally,
that is the biggest thing to worry about, especially if you want to have one of your running backs at least have the ability to run up the middle. It's all going to come down to the guards in the center, and you've got a good center.
Guard play killed Iowa passing the football against Michigan and Penn State last year.
Yeah, that's also true.
We're not going to watch that tape again. That was brutal. We've watched it on the podcast. I mean, time after time after time, guys slipping through the middle. If they can figure out guard, look out. From wide receiver standpoint, from tight end, can we all agree on that? This Iowa offense can be very explosive if they can figure out guard play.
Yeah. The way Iowa runs their offense, they need a good offensive line to be a high-level team.
And boy, again, I mean, I think people are a little bit undervaluing this line. I really do. I'm specifically talking about the two tackles and the center. I mean, these two tackles could be draft picks next year, and the center is projected to be a first-round draft pick. So you've got five guys to fill two spots. If you can do that, this line can be the best in the country. I mean, they've won the award for best offensive line in the country when they haven't been all that good. So, all right, defensively, they lose a lot on the line. They lose Cedric Lattimore. They lose Brady Reef. course, they lose AJ Epenesa. That's the biggest name there. They do return Chauncey Golston. We thought he may leave. He's returning. Davion Nixon is back. He, of course, a big boy inside, 6'3", 305. So he's going to be a guy who can fill up space. They get the transfer from Northern Illinois, Jack Heflin, at 6'4", 312. That's a real big boy right there. And he's a guy who I kind of thought may be the other starter at tackle. Right now, Ferentz and the staff, they're pretty high on Austin Schulte. He's the other guy listed as a starting tackle. John Wagner, he was a defensive end last year. According to this depth chart, he slid inside, although Kelvin Bell, the defensive line specialist coach, did say that they like to have flexibility, so Wagner can move inside or out. And then Noah Shannon is another guy at tackle that's listed on the depth chart. And then at right end, you've got Zach Van Valkenburg as the starter. The Division II transfer did play last year. A lot of it seems like a really high energy guy at 6'4", 270. And then, of course, they got pass rushing specialist Joe Evans, who's a former quarterback who reportedly has gotten a lot bigger, really has bettered his body. Logan Lee also listed at defensive end. So a lot of different guys. There's obviously concern because you lose three of your mainstays at the line, on the line, but Iowa tends to just basically rotate eight or nine guys. If when they're happy, they're rotating eight or nine guys. Noah, your thoughts on the defensive line? Can this defensive line replace the likes of Epenesa, Lattimore, and Reef? And how good can the tackles be? They've got a lot of guys in there. Can somebody actually step up and be the mainstay starters on that line?
Well, if there's anybody I'm looking at to be the big name in the tackles, to me, it's going to be Davion Nixon. I've got high hopes for him. He's, from what I remember seeing him play, he plays really hard. He's really good. So I've got high hopes for him. But, I mean, you mentioned when you're going through it, at the very least, you've got four or five quality players there that can fill that line. And you've got a couple of names that are good depth pieces. I think they've got a solid defensive line again this year, and guys that can just continue to rotate in and out, keep guys fresh, and have a pretty good defensive line throughout an entire game.
I mean, remember, Schulte played a lot last year. Noah Shannon has played for a couple of years. These are guys that are not, I mean, they're not brand new players. They may be guys that weren't starting. Alex, your thoughts on the offense of the defensive line? My only surprise was seeing Wagner inside, but again, sounds like they're comfortable with him outside or inside.
Yeah, I can't say I was really surprised too much at all. Yeah, I mean, not really at all. I think we expected Schulte to be there. Nixon, same thing, I guess. Same with Golston. So, yeah, I mean, Wagner, I've always wanted him to be more of a fixture just because I think he has the best football name on this team. But other than that, yeah, no big surprises.
Ben Valkenburg is a guy that I've followed closely. I do think the biggest question for me is not interior line play. It's can somebody establish himself on the outside? Because Joe Evans is not a natural defensive end. He's more of a hybrid pass rusher for obvious passing downs. So he's probably not going to be a three-down guy. You look at a guy like John Wagner, maybe he could have been that guy, but they've listed him outside. So that either tells me that he's just really excelled, or excuse me, they listed him inside. That tells me that he's either really excelled, or it doesn't mean anything because it's a depth chart, or perhaps somebody has not stepped up on the inside.
Remember, it's Zach... the same depth chart that has Coy Kronk as backing up Kallenberger.
That's true. And did not list Cole Banwart at guard.
I keep forgetting his name.
So that'll be interesting to see. I mean, we'll follow the line, but I'm with you, Noah. This Iowa just seems to just every year figure out a way to keep the offensive line, the defensive line strong. At linebacker, this was a bit of a surprise, Alex, 2 weeks ago when we heard from Phil Parker. Now, maybe it's a little bit of coach speak, and maybe he's trying to motivate certain guys. Phil Parker basically said during his press conference, and I know you're going to agree with this and blah, 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 because you always talk about the secondary, but my thought when I saw that Jamin Colbert was opting out this year, he's the only starter on this team that opted out due to COVID, and more power to him. He's has that right. But my concern was linebacker, because you lose Colbert, you lost Welch from last year, and he lost Dylan Doyle because of Chris Doyle's firing. He transferred to Baylor, where he's starting down there in Waco. So my concern was linebacker. Now, they run a lot more 4-2-5 than we're used to, but they also lost Geno Stone at safety. So Dane Belton, his name has been tossed around at safety. So then who do you play at cash? So linebacker was my biggest concern. It is interesting, though, when listening to Phil Parker 2 weeks ago, Phil Parker said the position that has impressed him the most has been linebacker. And that blindsided me. I did not expect him to say that. He says Jack Campbell has really stepped up. 6'5", 243 from Sioux Falls. Sounded like he was pretty high on Seth Benson and Nick Neiman. Justin Jacobs is a four or five star kid from Ohio that was being recruited by Ohio State. And then Barrington Wade is also on that list. But Alex, I know you're always concerned about the secondary, but he said his biggest concern at this point was secondary. Was the secondary in depth of the secondary I say secondary, I'm talking cornerbacks and probably safeties as well. I know that's not going to surprise you, but are you a little surprised at how high he was on the linebackers?
Yeah, but pleasantly so. I mean, I think he probably had those same concerns that you're talking about going in, and maybe that's what he means by being surprised at how well they've played, compared to what he expected. It's obviously concerning about the secondary. I think it's in my mind is the biggest question mark on defense. I think it's their biggest.
I'm curious. Why is that though? Why is secondary?
Why is it that I usually am more worried? Or
no, I understand why usually, because sometimes they let they have given up big plays at times, but. They lose Michael Ojemudia and Geno Stone, but they do return three guys who have started. Brents, Moss, and Hankins. Terry Roberts has experience. And then they get two guys who have started, Kayvon Merriweather and Jack Kerner, who can both play safety. I understand that not a huge number of games that they've started, between those five guys, but that's a decent amount to work from.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I don't think there's any big hole there. I just feel like they're a little bit shallow and, they just don't. The guys that are there are going to have to prove themselves, I think. And whenever you lose guys, I didn't think they were fantastic last year. And when you lose guys, it's just a little bit of a, not a bald spot, but a bit of a thinning spot. And, I think they can't afford to have much for injuries or COVID sit outs or whatever at those positions. So, if everyone's healthy, I feel okay about them, but I think that's just the area to watch, I think, on defense.
Noah, your thoughts on linebacker and cornerback, safety? I mean, safety right now, we've got Jack Kerner, who was in the Boeing accident, seems to be okay. According to this depth chart, Kayvon Merriweather backing him up, I think it'd be great to see Merriweather latch onto the strong safety position. That way, Belton can be played at cash, because if you notice here, Dane Belton is listed as the number one cash, because Barrington Wade is listed as the Leo linebacker, which, again, they're probably not going to play a ton of 4-3 unless they just really like Barrington Wade, Jack Campbell, and Nick Neiman. So that they want to keep Belton there as opposed to sliding him back at strong safety. Either Sebastian Castro is going to have to step up, Kayvon Merriweather is supposed to step up, or somebody else is going to have to play cash, which is probably going to take another guy from your defensive backs. It's probably going to be a Julius Brents or Riley Moss. I think it's imperative that they keep Belton at cash and figure out who they can play at strong safety.
Yeah, and that makes sense to me, leaving Belton as the cash player. And, I mean, I don't really know who else would step up on this team. Of course, the only name I'd recognize from the rest of the safeties listed here would be Merriweather. So I don't know who else would step up if they move Merriweather over to strong safety, if one of them between Kerner and Merriweather have to, they're injured, COVID reserve, whatever, if somebody else has to step up, I don't know who that's going to be. So that would be my concern. But as far as Kerner and Merriweather and how they're going to play, I'm not too terribly concerned. Of course, it could be better, but we have seen them play before and play well in some cases. So I think it can work. I'm just a little bit concerned about the depth because I don't know much about the guys behind them.
it would be great to see Terry. Can we all agree it'd be great to see Terry Roberts step up? He's been a guy who we've seen a lot on special teams. If he could grab onto a cornerback position spot, that would be huge. And by the way, I did sell what Iowa lost a little short. They lose Geno Stone to the NFL. They lose Michael Ojemudia to the NFL. They also lost DJ Johnson. Remember, he played a lot last year. He actually transferred to Purdue and got a waiver to play immediately, so he's going to play against Iowa week one. So they do lose it. I get that. Phil Parker has, think about the guys he's churned out to the NFL, whether that be Desmond King, Josh Jackson, Michael Ojemudia. All those guys are playing in the league.
And playing
Geno
well.
Stone, yeah. I mean, Desmond King probably should have been a Pro Bowler by now.
One of the best slot corners, if I remember right.
Michael Ojemudia has been starting for the Broncos. Would any of us have predicted Michael Ojemudia was a starter in the NFL? And he is starting for the Broncos. And a little bit due to injury, but I think he's held his own out there. Okay, special teams. We talked about Duncan and Shudak. Punter, Torrey Taylor. You got this the other day on our countdown to kickoff, right?
I saw that this morning.
Okay, this morning. Torrey Taylor, guy from Australia, never played a down. He's never played a down of American football before, and he's coming over here to play for the Hawks. But I always had good success with guys from Australia. Michael Sleep Dalton comes to mind. They've had good success with guys who were first-year punters. Ron Caluzzi comes to mind. So he's listed as the number one punter. Ryan Grisandi is a scholarship punter as well. And then they have a transfer, I believe, North Dakota State. Nick Phelps is a guy. So they've got a little bit more depth at punter. Punting is winning, as I said in my text earlier this morning. How concerned are you with the punting game right now, Alex?
I have high hopes. I mean, it's a...
Based on what?
Well, just from what I've heard, I mean, we've had some pretty bad punting in the past, and so I feel like even if they can just, be average, I feel like that's fine.
Don't talk about Colton Rastetler that way.
I never said that name, but I liked him, though. I liked his little...
He was good on trick plays.
That's true, because you never knew what he was going to do anyways.
So that's just, I hope they can figure out somebody else to run those trick plays.
Yeah. I feel pretty good overall.
Punt returns. Alex, I was a little... this would be one position where I was a little bit disappointed. And no offense to Max Cooper. And I could be totally off on this, but this was a position that I was a little bit concerned prior to the release of the depth chart, and I was a little disappointed to see Max Cooper's name. I was hoping that somebody else had emerged. Amir Smith-Marset has said he'd be willing to return punts, but apparently Iowa is not interested in having him return punts, at least as far as we know. I understand it from a durability standpoint. He's probably your best kickoff returner in the country, or at least in the Big Ten. So I get that, but I guess I was hoping that somebody had emerged at the punt return position, and it is Max Cooper, who got some time last year, played okay, but was not explosive. Noah, are you disappointed by that, or could this maybe be an indication that Cooper has latched on a position and committed and potentially made this explosive position for the special teams unit?
I mean, it's possible. If he's got some experience, he's been doing it, and we've always known that he's going to be that kind of, explosive kind of player. It seems like this is a pretty good spot for him if he can't get into the actual receiver rotation. So if it works, I mean, at this point we're talking about punt returns. Is it important? Sure, but it's not exactly at the top of everybody's list of what they're going to be talking about.
But you can lose games based on punt returns. Kyle Gronewig. sorry, but that's...
You do make an interesting point, because I was talking to Austin yesterday, and he mentioned something about a guy fair catching at the 1 yard line.
Yeah.
That's, if you do that, you need to be replaced or have a serious talking to, because that's
not
a good play.
Somebody did that for Iowa in a game I was watching highlights of the other day. They caught it at the 3. It might have been Gronewig.
Why?
It might have been Gronewig. I mean,
At least give it a chance to bounce into the end zone. It's the 3-yard line versus potentially, no, what, the 2-yard line?
You're fair catching. See, I believe, now I'm sure there's data behind this, Micaiah. I don't think anybody should ever fair catch inside the 10. Is that stupid, or maybe should say inside the 5?
It's probably not the 10. It's probably more like the 7. But once it gets inside that far, it has a... Yeah. I know. Potato, potato. But once it gets in that far, it has a really high chance of going into the end zone. So.
Well, we hope they can... If Max Cooper... You know... I remember he was a favorite of yours early on, Micaiah. You predicted that Max Cooper would be the next big thing at Iowa as far as wide receiver. Now, he hasn't been, but he's been bigger than my predictions of Max Cooper, of Jay Shiel, Adrian Falconer, and Oliver Martin. He's been a guy who they have played. He plays on special teams, and of course, he's getting the time as punt returner, and we'd love to see him. I mean, I think we all agree. He's a guy who came in with a pretty loaded wide receiver class. I mean, remember, that was the same class as Amir Smith-Marset and Brandon Smith. So it would be nice to see Cooper. Alex and I talked about the last show we recorded together, the possibility that maybe Max Cooper would be a guy I would be willing to allow to come back because of the NCAA's exemption for eligibility this year. He could be a guy who Iowa says, hey, we'll use a scholarship on you next year. We're going to be down two of our best receivers in Smith and Smith-Marset. Come back next year, return punts for us, and possibly get in the rotation. I'd love to see that happen, but even if it doesn't, it'd be good to see Max Cooper excel on special teams this year. Amir Smith-Marset will return kickoffs. Deep snaps will be a new guy, Austin Spiewak. I don't anticipate any problems there. It's been a long time since we've seen blunders from long snappers at Iowa, although Tyler Kluber did have his moments. Your overall reactions before we go to our short break and we turn to the schedule. Let's start with Alex. Your overall thoughts on the depth chart. Again, for me, not a whole lot of surprises. What were your thoughts?
Well, outside the offensive line, I didn't have much for surprises. I guess a little bit with maybe Dane Belton, some of the secondary, but that, you know, we weren't sure how that was going to play out anyways. Overall, I mean, I feel pretty good. It's really just that offensive line to me is just the core of everything. And that's assuming the quarterback play is even passable. I think the offensive line is what it's going to come down to. So overall, I have a pretty good impression.
44-yard touchdown for George Kittle as we were just recording this.
Did he shed like 6 tacklers?
Probably.
Austin, Alex, your thoughts on George Kittle? 44-yard.
My thoughts on? You mean the best skill player in the NFL?
You could make corpse is pronounced core, not corpse. Okay, you do realize that there is such thing as a corpse, right?
Is, but when you're talking about military, it's pronounced war.
Excuse me?
Talking about a military position or a group, it's usually a corps. And if you're talking about a group of people, that's what that references. That would be a corps. C-O-R-P-S, core. This comes probably from the same guy who said that colonel has no R in it.
Okay, hold on a second. Corpse, C-O-R-P-S. A body of people engaged in a particular activity.
Yes, but it's not pronounced that way. Click on the thing. Click on the speaker thing.
I feel like there's more than one way to pronounce that, though, because I've heard people, we've heard people all over the sporting world use the term corpse.
Yeah.
Like
the Chicago Bulls the last couple of years have been a corpse.
Yeah, you don't want your offensive line to be a corpse, C-O-R-P-S-E. Anyways, okay. So, you look at... I guess let's go to Micaiah. Your overall reactions to the depth chart, your thoughts, concerns, biggest reaction.
I'm never big on first-year quarterbacks, regardless of what league they're in, whether it's college, NFL.
You need to turn towards your microphone and speak up.
I am turning towards the mic. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Good.
Yes.
I've never really been a fan of first-year quarterbacks, regardless of whether it's college or the NFL, as I chew on my microphone here. Other than that, I think everything is looking to shape up to be a really good team. I think you guys misunderstood what I was saying earlier, and I was going to correct myself because you're having a ball. But I don't think this is a bad wide receiver group. I think it's a really good wide receiver group. I just don't think it's going to be elite unless they get that third guy to be on that level as well. As just like, you can't stop these guys. If they get that third guy, it'll be the best wide receiver group Iowa's ever had, because they've never really had three top-end wide receivers.
Can we all agree if Amir Smith-Marset plays like he did against USC, and Brandon Smith can play the way he did before he got hurt last year, those two dudes are going to be basically unstoppable. I mean, with Amir Smith-Marset's speed and Brandon Smith's hands and size and athletic ability, leaping ability. Noah, your thoughts?
I mean, I'm expecting really good things from the receivers, especially specifically those two this year. They have a lot of potential, and they have shown they can be really good. It's just going to be a matter of consistency. Like you're talking about, can we get this on a consistent basis, this high level of production?
I think this is the year. I mean, next year they're going to have production coming back, but they're not going to have the size and speed that you have with Smith and Smith-Marset. Noah, your overall reactions to the depth chart?
I mean, after going through it piece by piece like we just did, I am pleasantly surprised. Of course, I hadn't really dug into the depth chart in a lot of detail until now, but I'm expecting, specifically on the offensive end, outside of the guards, and we've covered that in a lot of detail in this podcast, outside of the guards, it's shaping up to be a really good offensive unit. Between Smith and Smith-Marset on the outsides, you got high hopes for Laporta and Beyer at your tight end. Three of your five offensive linemen are potential NFL, high-end NFL draft picks, and I'm really high on the running backs. I think all three of them are really good talents. Petras sounds like he's shaping up to be a really good quarterback. Ferentz seems to like him. It's all shaping up to be a really good offensive unit.
So, to me. So where are we concerned? I mean, what do we
the guards, which are a very big part of protecting the quarterback and getting the running game going. And on the defensive end, I'm worried about depth.
Makai was more concerned about. Wasn't Makai more concerned about quarterback?
Yes, but
That's just general skepticism because first-year quarterback.
I'm fine with that.
I'm like that regardless of who it is.
Makai is probably skeptic of, you know, Patrick Mahomes and his first year and his new big contract.
Patrick Mahomes was terrible his first year in the NFL, okay? What did he do his first year in the NFL?
He played one game.
Exactly.
Because he was a rookie.
He sucked.
Okay, but here's what I'll say. I'm okay with your take on that, Makai, about being concerned. If you look at first-year quarterbacks at Iowa historically, Ricky Stanzi, Drew Tate, C.J. Beathard, Jake Rudock, they've all had pretty decent years, and they've played pretty well from a quarterback standpoint. C.J. Beathard, of course, his first year as a starter, they went undefeated. But I'm not concerned about quarterback. I am with you, Noah. Guard is my biggest concern. If their guards are as bad as they were last year, listen, I think we all like Nate Stanley. Maybe none of us loved Nate Stanley. I think he was a good teammate and a good quarterback at times. He really could not do it. Nothing he could do in that Michigan or Penn State game. He was just absolutely, every single time, took the snap, within a second, he had a guy in his face, and pressure up the middle. Any quarterback will tell you, pressure up the middle is the toughest pressure to handle. You can deal with off the sides, off the ends, but if it's coming straight at you, it's almost impossible to game plan for.
Well, let's not forget the other problem with getting all of that kind of pressure with Stanley as your quarterback is that he has this thing every time he gets pressured, he spins around and runs an extra 5 yards behind him. So there's a potential to lose even more yardage if he still gets sacked.
Well, good news is Robert Windsor is no longer at Penn State. That's good news. but yeah, they ended up to play Michigan this year, which is good. But they do have to play Penn State at Penn State. Okay, we're going to take a quick short break. And when we come back, we'll make our final predictions. Schedule our predictions for week one, Iowa, Purdue. And we're going to break down the season and come up with a final record for each one of us here on Brandon Thoughts week 131. We'll be back after this.